Good evening. My name is Denise, and I'm an alcoholic. And I have the honor of introducing our speaker tonight. And one thing that AA has taught me was when I first came in was to get a foundation. And with that foundation, I was told to the lineage of my sponsor and whatnot. And because we all come from, eventually, it all leads back to Bill and Bob. But so tonight, I get to introduce my papa sponsor. So that means that my sponsor has got her hands full with me and him. And she's so tonight, I would like to introduce my papa sponsor, Mike P.
Good evening. Mike, alcoholic. You know, my experience is pretty straightforward. I was talking to my sponsor. He says, you have to talk about a little bit about your beginning, so I will. I was born in the States, grew up in Venezuela. First 5 years, I totaled 2 cars. I was bedridden for 7 months with hepatitis and mononucleosis. I was incarcerated overseas. And I had a few other little glitches. So I was on a roll from the very beginning. And I came back to the States and I said, you got to stop this nonsense. You really need to grow up. And so what I didn't realize, you know, was that when I went into Texas and I started drinking, and I don't remember if I was there a month or 6 months. And I remember it really cranked up there because I would wake, you know, I'd pass out at 1 a.m. and wake up at 3 and need a drink. And so, you know, there I started looking around and I thought, I got a problem. You know, I remember doing some drugs and more drugs and alcohol. And I remember crawling up to my apartment. I looked in the window and I thought, Jesus, Mike, you know, you got a problem. And I said, yes, Texas, I'm out of here. So off I went to Florida. I did a lot of this. And but, you know, at the end of the day, I'd like to, you know, all of that stuff's great, you know, but none of it was so sufficient to get me to stop drinking for one day, not one. I remember being in a dungeon, and it was a dungeon, and it was in the middle of a little kind of skirmish. I think you people refer to them as revolutions. And, you know, I didn't last 24 hours without getting lit up in that place. And I thought, after a few days, I said, this ain't so bad. You know, it's easier. Everybody hears, you know, drugs and alcohol and don't have to go out looking for it. And they leave you alone. And I don't know. Seems like a pretty good deal for me. And I think about that. You know, I think if they would have offered me the Taj Mahal or stay there, and if it's the Taj Mahal, I couldn't get any drugs and alcohol, I would have rather stayed there. And that's just the truth of the matter. And so as time progressed, you know, I always, my sense, and it's, you know, I'm very fortunate about this. I got stoned when I was 16, and I stayed stoned till I was 36. And it got very clear to me that the reason I drank and drug, primarily drank, I like drugs because they allowed me to drink like a gentleman, kind of like this guy right here. That's what I look like after a run. And then you say, how you doing? I go, fine, thanks for asking. But I really didn't recognize that as an issue. You know, everybody I hung around with did what I did. In South America, it was like a kid in a candy factory. I mean, alcohol was, you know, as long as you had money, they didn't give you a hard time. I never got a DUI. I don't think they ever gave a DUI, but that's not the point. I never got one. And what my experience there was that I just, nothing bothered me. Nothing was so dramatic that it got me to stop. So I really got to get clear about this drunk-a-log business, which was, in my case, worthless. What got me over the hill was after about 18 and a half years, I would drink and I couldn't get the feeling. And I thought, this is serious stuff, you know, and so I would try drinking some different stuff, and I didn't want to, I stayed off the drugs, and I thought, well, maybe if I could stop for a couple days, just a couple days, let's not get dramatic, and I couldn't, you know. I would get up in the morning, And I would say, today's the day. I had a good job and all that sort of thing. I'd say, today's the day I'm not going to drink. Just today. And I remember coming in here, I mean, going to work and thinking, I'm not going to drink, I'm not going to drink, I'm not going to drink. Till around 10, you know, around 10 o'clock, I'd start thinking, well, maybe, no, I'm not going to drink today. And then for lunch, I didn't drink during the day because once I started, I couldn't stop. So it was clear to me if I was going to hold down a job, I had to wait until the end of the day. And so around, somebody would offer me a beer, and I go, oh, no, no, thank you. And about 3 o'clock, you know, the word moderation would kick in. And that's all I heard was moderation. And then by 5, you know, tomorrow, by God, tomorrow's the day. And 2 years later, I'm saying tomorrow's the day. I mean, it was amazing. And I didn't realize that I never understood that. And when I drank, I could not stop. I mean, it was not like you a little. And then I was not a bar drinker. I couldn't go to a bar and hang out for a couple hours. That wouldn't last. I was a two-fisted drinker. I drank to get high. That was the deal. And so what happened for me was that I remember going to a meeting here in Marietta in 1984. And my brother got sober, and I told him I had a drinking problem. And he says, yeah, so do I, but I go to AA. I said, good for you. So I tried, you know, I went to church and I asked the priest, I got a drinking problem, and he suggested I quit drinking, and I thought, what a dumbass quit. The answer is that. And doctors said the same thing, and so I finally went to an AA meeting with my brother, and very nice people, really. It was down in Marietta, and you know, I remember leaving there going, you know, these are very nice people, you know, and if it wasn't for abstinence, I think I could get into this program. And that did not faze me. So anyway, off I went, and finally, you know, it's really by the grace of God, but to be in that space where I couldn't drink and I could not drink, and alcohol would not do for me, was the most terrifying space I'd ever been in. It just, all those things that happened to me those first 20 years was not comparable to that. I can remember passing out, driving, hitting, you know, I used to say I went to sleep on 95. And I spun out and hit this guardrail a few times. And I remember the only thing left was the front seat of the car. And I got real attitude over Toyota about that, because I don't see why they couldn't produce a car they can't bounce off of. You know. And what happened, I just remember going home and, you know, pouring a big glass of vodka, thinking, thank God for alcohol. How would you go through an event like this without drinking? And what's kind of interesting is when I went through my fourth step, I thought about that when I was incarcerated, and I'm sitting there, you know, going, geez, thank God for drugs and alcohol. What would I do if I couldn't do drugs and alcohol in this place? And it never occurred to me why I was there. And that's really, you know, the whole issue. So when they say I'm insane, I go, not me. Only when I drink too much. And so as time progressed, though, we were in California, and I just, you know, it's a gift. Because I had not been able to go to sleep for 20 years. I had to have something. And I can remember, you know, I mean, my best case scenario is I'd pour myself a little tumbler of about 12, 14 ounces of vodka, and then I'd shoot it, and then I'd get in bed real quick, and then I could go to sleep. And I remember we were in California, and I remember going in this meeting, and I just gave up. I was starting to argue with Debbie, and I said, I can't take it anymore. So it's kind of interesting. I went out. This is typical. I went out, and I looked at the street name, and it's a number. So I jumped in the car and just started driving. And I didn't look at the numbers. Who needs to look at the numbers? And sure enough, I get about 5 miles. I realize I'd passed it. So I came back, and it was right across the street from where I lived. And so what happened at that point is I just went to this meeting, and, you know, I don't remember much about it. And they were all nice people and all that stuff. But I didn't expect anything different. And I remember going home that night, and I went to sleep. You know, and I was stunned by that, absolutely mind-boggled by that. And so I woke up in the morning, and I said, well, I'm going to do this again. You know, I'll keep doing this for a while and see what happens. And I've been doing it ever since. You know, day at a time, just one moment at a time. And I would say this, you know, when I remember reading page 62, the self or self-centeredness is the root of all my troubles, and it talks about being driven by those 100 forms of fear. One of what I recognize is true to me is that what keeps me sober is my self or self-centeredness. This is absolutely a better deal for me. Being in that space where I couldn't drink and could not drink is terrifying for a drunk. I mean, it's brutal. So when I go through that process of drinking and not drinking, and you know, I never wanted to quit. I mean, you know, I just needed to get it back. I just needed that feeling. And what really helped me is AA, because it really explains everything. You know, it talks about I drink essentially because of the way it makes me feel. And I got it. Bam. That's it. That's all it ever was. All where I grew up and parents and da-da-da-da-da was all just rhetoric. And it still is rhetoric. I drink because of the way it makes me feel. And to me, it's just a chemical reaction that takes place in my brain that gives me a certain sensation that I have to have. And I cannot not do it. So when I came to AA, I kept going, and I will say this. I have always made a very positive impact on AA. I can remember that first year after sharing many of my grand thoughts. This lady came up to me, nice lady, you know. She says, Mike, I want to thank you. I said, really? She says, yeah, you really helped me. I said, how so? She goes, was it something I said? She goes, no. Actually, I'm just so afraid that if I don't quit drinking, I'm going to end up as fucked up as you. And she said it with no animosity. She didn't say it like it was a joke. It was just like fact. But I was still proud of myself. So I think there's, you know, as time has gone by, I've been very, you know, I just suit up and show up, really. When I came in, you guys wanted to work the steps, good for you. You know, you want to be nicer people, good for you. Nicer husbands and all that, husbands with wives. And I just didn't grasp. I wanted to stay not drinking. That's all I came for. And that's what they focused on. Back then, it was real big on the newcomer. And so a lot of what was, I went to this meeting, you know, in San Francisco, and we went down to La Jolla, but every morning at 7, and 90% of the time we talk about how do you not drink? You know, how do you get through the day without drinking? And I got some great advice, you know. I remember a guy telling me, his name was Painter Dave, and he says, I wash my car. Whenever I want to drink, I go wash my car. And he said, I got beat up old Rambler or something, and it's 12 years old. And how stupid. I mean, for crying out loud. And I remember going home, sitting on a chair, and then I got a little pain in my back, and I thought, geez, you know, and I closed my eyes, started dreaming. And, you know, the next minute I'm in front of a doctor, and he's saying, you know, we're going to have to operate. And the next minute I'm in the operating table, and then I'm recovering, and the guy comes in, and he says, sorry, man, you know, we blew it. You're going to be a cripple. And then the next minute I'm in, you know, in a wheelchair digging, you know, out of garbage cans off San Francisco. And I tell you, I got up, and I went out there, and I washed that car. And I want you to know I had the shiniest car in San Diego for at least a year and a half. So I think that, you know, one of the things that, you know, as I go through the process, you know, to me, powerlessness is a process. To me, it took a good year and a half to grasp that. I mean, at first I got it, you can't drink. I get it, I'm not stupid, you know. And I said, well, you're going to have to do more than that. I go, well, that's people like you. I don't have to do any more than that. And I did. I would just focus on not drinking. That was the deal. And I would go to the meetings, and I go to the step meetings and all that. But to me, I was there not to drink. And if I wasn't drinking, boom, I'm done. And it really went to a point where I was pretty spaced out, I must admit. My life revolved around drugs and alcohol. People I hung around with, places I went, big business I was in, everything revolved around drugs and alcohol, mostly alcohol. And so, you know, to me, it's like I went through puberty at 40. You know, it was just like, whoa. And so when I went through that process, you know, I was going through that process, I would I'd just keep coming back, really, you know, and I'd go to meetings, and it worked for me. I will say this. The way I got to steps was people would force me to go. I mean, you know, like one guy would say, you know, there's a step study. You got to do the fourth step. I got it. He goes, no, you need to go. Because what I heard the first three steps was, I can't drink. No human power can relieve me of my alcoholism, and God could and would if he were sought. So I was fine. I just, every morning you get up, you ask God to please keep you clean and sober. And then you go through the day and you thank him at night. I mean, you know, and I'm sober, so it's working for me. It was, the rest of you people had all these other ideas. And that was okay for you. You needed to be nicer people. And so what would happen is that when I got to the fourth step is when all this stuff started to come up, the old stuff. And, you know, I would sit there with, my brother was in the program, and I would argue with him. You know, I would write out, you know, who you, see, they said, who do you have a resentment over? And I could not understand what that meant. But then somebody said, well, who are you pissed off with? And I love that, man. And so I went for 13 weeks, you know, and you did a column every day, you know, every week. And then, you know, you kind of put it together as you go through. And I would argue with my brother about what happened, you know, and I'd say, you know, I was a political prisoner. And he goes, really? And I go, yeah. He said, I don't remember that. And I said, what do you mean you don't remember that? And he goes, yeah, I was with you. Remember, I wasn't there, but I know what happened. And what did the judge say? I would hang up. I don't need to talk to this guy. And then I would, you know, what happened about this hepatitis business? Something I ate. I would argue with doctors about that. They go, yeah, what happened? I got to have a hepatitis mononucleosis. You know, I was down for about 7 months. Really, how'd you get that? Eating fish off the coast of Mexico. Must have been the grease. And they would look, and they would argue, I would argue with them. They go, we're not aware of people getting hepatitis from grease. And I think, what a quack. These people are so uneducated.
Oh my God.
And so it was a struggle for me to come back to reality. And one of the things that's a struggle is reality. You know, I saw that I could literally tell myself something enough times where I believe it. And it becomes true. And then I'll argue the point. No matter how absurd it is. You know, that's irrelevant. And I remember, you know, kind of going through this process. When I went through that fourth step, they said, well, go see, got to go see, you know, you got to do your fifth. And I go, well, I ain't doing no, you know, who? So, well, you don't have, there's no, you have to do it or you're going to get drunk. And I thought, well, okay. So they said, you know, only you and one other person. So I figured that's not a problem because then I can deny it. Secondly is that all this stuff happened many years, you know, over 7 years ago, so I'm cool. And the other stuff was I was overseas, so they can't do anything to me. And so what I did was I went to see his father. His name was Father Bill W. And so I went in there, I took the fourth step, and I read it. It's, you know, I don't know what everybody talks about. I read it. It took me like an hour. And he looked at me, and he goes, you know, you're a very interesting character. And which, again, when you know, it was like to-do. It was just another to-do. I didn't get this lightning or this cloud or anything. I just suit up, show up, and do it. And I remember he said a couple things which I found profound. One was that he said, you forgive yourself. I have no idea what he was talking about. And I go, yeah, of course I did. You know, and he'd look at me and he'd say, son, are you a Catholic first or are you an alcoholic first? And I thought, well, I can get this one right because I see the collar. I'm not an idiot. And he says, no, it's okay. You know, it's okay. I'll tell you. He said, you know, I've been sober 30 some odd years, and I got God in AA, and I celebrate God in Mass. That's that. And that was a tremendous benefit to me because I was struggling with that whole business of religion, and you know, not that I was a very religious person, but it's still, you know, I have these thoughts of. And one of the things that really helped me is I had resentment. And I had a resentment so incredibly powerful that I could be in a great mood and start thinking about it and I'd get incensed about it. And I remember about sitting around and I told him about this event. And he, you know, about 3 months later, I'm watching a movie on TV about it. And it was gone. It was just poof, gone. No, nothing was there. And I thought, this stuff works. This really, really does work. And so, you know, one of the things that has always prompted me to keep coming back is it's a benefit for me. you know, honest to God. If it were not for my selfish self-centeredness, I'm not sure I could stay sober. You know, I came here to improve the quality of my life, and it keeps getting better, or I wouldn't be here. They used to tell me the old time, you know, it's a better deal in here than it is out there. We'd all be out there. I mean, this is not, you know. As I went through the fourth and the fifth step, I went back to powerlessness because I really didn't comprehend the magnitude of the problem. Because I still thought I was drinking. You know, if you don't drink, you'll be fine. And I didn't grasp it. So it's, you know, I just went back through the steps again, and I started understanding that once I quit drinking, the powerlessness is still there. And I started to recognize that alcoholism is going to be with me. And how does it manifest itself in sobriety? And one of the things that I started to identify with was the physical manifestations of alcoholism. Because I stopped drinking, that was one thing. But that was very identifiable, you know. When I started drinking, I knew it. What I didn't recognize is that when I would get a sensation that I liked, and I want more. Oh, baby, I want more. And, you know, it started, you know, they would say, well, you know, I would remember them talking about, you got to go, in order for you to stay sober, you're going to have to find things to do because you're going to get pretty bored. And I said, thanks for sharing. And so I started running. And I got a little buzz from running. Not a bad deal. And I went from 1 mile to 3 miles, to 7 miles, 12 miles, to marathons. And what I got out of that was really tough. Really tired, but I stayed sober. And I think that one of the things that I really had to learn was relearn everything. I mean, when somebody says go to a restaurant that doesn't serve alcohol, you must be joking. I could not understand in the States how you guys had so many of these fast food places. I go, who goes to a fast food place if you can't get a drink? And they go, well, that's why they have takeout. You know, you take it out and then you go drink in the car. And so this whole thought process for me was tremendous. And I still suffer from the physical manifestations. It just shows up in a different way. Anything worth doing is worth overdoing, or I'm not going to mess with it. It's as simple as that. I mean, I'm either going to be great or I'm not going to show up. And I think what works for me in AA is that it keeps getting better. My life insurmountably has gotten much better. It will not guarantee my sobriety today or tomorrow, but I will say that I don't longer have the shakes, you know. I don't jerk in bed. I thought everybody did that. You know, you lay in there and all of a sudden, and Debbie would go, you okay? Oh, yeah, man, I'm an exciting kind of guy. I got things to do. So, as you know, when I look at, you know, the fourth and fifth step, and then I go back to powerlessness, to me, it's still one, two, and three every day. I am powerless over alcohol. You know, today in Daily's Reflections, it keeps on, I don't, what is our primary purpose is to stay sober. And, you know, I would think that at some point, but there is no point, because I've been here long enough to know that anybody can drink. Anybody can drink. Anybody can drug. I am very, very cautious with drugs because they, for me, and I only speak for myself, is that it got me to the same place. So, you know, when somebody, when the doctor would say, I want you to take one of these every 4 hours, I heard take four of them every hour. And then I'd call them that afternoon and go, I'm out. You know, I gave you enough for a week. And I, well, let me go get a call another doctor or something. But, and so I've had to go in the hospital a few times. And what I found out is that, you know, God will carry me through this stuff. You know, the first time I dislocated my, you know, did a shoulder thing. And I remember the gal coming in because they got put you down for it. You know, they have to knock you out. And came to, and she came up and she says, do you want another shot? And I go, no, thank you. And I was just floored by that. You know, I mean, that was just, and then to this day, I've learned to deal with a little pain. I didn't do any pain. First time I tore up my knee, I was, got strung out on painkillers. And the guy kept telling me, he says, you know, Mike, you cannot take enough painkillers to stop the pain. And I thanked him for sharing. Because he just wouldn't give me enough or good enough stuff, you know. So anyway, as time progressed, that's what I watch out for today. I mean, doctors, you know, doctors are doctors. They're trying to keep me comfortable. I don't need to be any more comfortable. Trust me, I know how to be what works for me. And I'm not suggesting that's true for anybody else. But I have gone through, and you know, I had a knee replacement, and they gave me narcotics, and it did not affect me. you know, in that way. I mean, I actually got sick like normal people did, you know. So the only thing I did is that I followed the directions in the book, and I followed the directions from the group when those things surfaced. So there's no reason why I have to do it. I mean, if I can do it, you can do it. I worked in the business. You know, that's what I did. I was in the food and beverage business and hotels and big banquets and bars and all that sort of thing. What was really strange to me, though, was that I never ran into me in all the years of working in hotels. And I'm really grateful for that. I was so scared to go in the bar. You know, Mike's in there guzzling Jack Daniels or something. And they'd be sitting there drinking a glass of wine or something. And, it was just amazing. I used to go to the Chain de Rotisserie dinners, and people would drink wine. And I'd say, no thanks. And, you know, they would drink half of it. You know, and I thought, these poor people. You know what I mean? And I realized that they do not feel what I feel, or they would drink like I drink. And so it's just night and day. It's just, it's a non-issue. I cannot drink. That's all I need to know. And then what am I willing to do not to drink? You know, going into the character defects, to me, all that is really about myself or self-centeredness. All my character defects are driven by my 100 forms of fear. When I don't get what I want, I act out, period. End of discussion. You don't give me what I want, I get a resentment. It has nothing to do with what it is. And I think the hardest part is keeping out of the circumstances. Circumstances did not get me drunk, and they will not keep me sober. You know, circumstances is a result of what I do. And, you know, it talks about I make decisions based on myself, which later place me in a position to be hurt. And my troubles are basically my own making. They arise out of the alcoholic, who is the extreme example of self-will run riot, though I usually don't think so. And that, to me, is step two. God's got to restore me to sanity because I don't see it. You know, when I get... There are certain things that I've had to learn to give up. And one of the things is whatever revs me up, I got to be very careful. I used to love anger. I love self-pity. Oh, poor Mike. If you had it as bad as poor Mike, you'd be, you know. And I couldn't understand. Finally, my sponsor said, God, you really get off on this self-pity, don't you? And I go, no, you don't understand. And what I found out was they have feelings. I love self-righteous indignation. Not bad. Not as good as self-pity, but rates can get there. And then the other thing is it doesn't have to be real. I mean, I could just sit in that green couch, you know, and just check out for a little while, get tears running down my eyes, you know, the whole biz. It's amazing what I'm capable of doing. Nothing positive, mind you, but just, you know, that kind of stuff. So when I think about, you know, the different steps, and so what I try to do is when I start acting out or acting inappropriately or something like that, I really go back to the fears. You know, what is it that I'm not getting? What is it that I'm afraid of losing? Because it always goes back to that. What happened to me at the beginning is that I get caught up in the, I'm angry. Well, I'm going to fix my anger, you know, and I just get madder. You know, I can remember when we were in Puerto Rico, I'd be going, I'm not going to get pissed off today. That's it. I'm not going to get pissed off today. Then I get on the elevator, it's slow, so I start getting pissed off at the elevator. Then I get in the car, and, you know, I mean, it's by the time I drive out of the driveway, I'm pissed. And I couldn't, you know, and it's that revved up sensation that I have to be real careful of. And that's what I talk about when I think of the manifestations of drugs and alcohol. It is always going to be in me, and I just need to be cautious. And I learn, you know, I cannot afford an argument. You know, I'm the kind of guy who would sit there and argue. Somebody throw up their arms and walk away, go, see, I won. I knew I was right. And they're going, I'm going to get away from this idiot. You know, I mean, this guy's probably dangerous, you know. And because anything that physically moves me is an issue. You know, somebody came by and gave me marbles. A real good friend of mine gave me some marbles today. Said it only took over 30 years. Right? But I'm a quick study. You know? So when I think about, you know, all of these issues and going through the 8th and 9th step, and I was very, you know, I was really lucky because I never stayed anywhere long enough. So when you say you have to go back and make amends, I go, don't know anybody. And I know they're not there. And if they are, they're gone because they're runners like me. I mean, the people I hung around with don't stay in one place. And so, my biggest thing was my family, you know. And you know, it's kind of coming to terms with some things are never going to change. And there is a space where, you know, guilt is another self-centered fear, is what I learned. And so there's this space where I can take responsibility for what I did, and I don't get hung up in the fear of the guilt, because guilt would just do the same thing. And it's a place where I accept responsibility and I just accept it and I move on. You know, what am I going to do about it? Same thing with, you know, a lot of the stuff that I had to work on was just stop doing it. You know, I mean, that's it. That's all you have to do is just stop it. When they would talk about some of the, you know, the activities that I was responsible for. I had head-on collision in sobriety. Why? Because I like to run, I drive fast, and I'm in a big rush to go nowhere. You know what I mean? So I'm, boom, pow. You know, fortunately nobody got hurt. But the fact remains is that there's certain things that I have to recognize. Cars is a big one. I love speed. That's why I never bought a motorcycle. I'm just not mature enough. I'm hoping in the next 10 or 12 years, maybe, if I get one with a tricycle, you know, with a four wheels. I saw one of those. Maybe I drive one of those or something, you know. Doesn't, has a, you know, speedometer goes up to 20 miles an hour. So. But I think that as I, you know, as I stay sober, I learn to deal with certain things. But the biggest problem that I need to recognize is the physical manifestations at this point. You know, nothing's going to, you know, I don't get up in the morning and think, oh, God, I want to drink. And I have never got up in the morning. I will tell you that candidly. That will not guarantee my sobriety, mind you. Because the people that I know that went out after a long period of time will tell you, have told me, they don't know why they drank. I mean, I expect to hear this terrible story about something happened and I just couldn't take it anymore and I drank. You don't know. You know, they just forgot. And so I always go back to page 24 where it talks about I cannot bring up with sufficient force the pain, suffering, humiliation of a week or a month ago. I am without defense against the next drink. And that's where the God business comes so critically, because the only thing that will get me past those moments is the God thing. I had an interesting experience with God. You know, when I came in, I like to touch on this because it wasn't, you know, I came in and they said, do you believe in God? Absolutely. You know, oh, Lord, won't you buy me a Mercedes? And so when I prayed and I wasn't drinking, that was I understood that, you know, and that worked until, you know, there gets to be a point, and I think where I got struck, what I thought was, God, keep me clean and sober, we're good. And then, you know, I kept reading. I know I read it 100 times, but, you know, turn your life and will over to God. I said, no, you know, let's not get carried away. Let's just wait a while for that. Let's just stick with the booze and the drugs, and we're going to be good. And there will be a point where, you know, that just, I become very uncomfortable, and I'm going to need something else. And what happened to me was, I told you I went through the fifth step, then I went back to the first step, and really what helped me through that was the issue about the magnitude of my problem. You know, that it was a power greater than myself, and I noticed that through the fourth step. I mean, they say that, you know, if it's stronger than self-preservation, you're nuts. You know, there's something about this self-preservation business that the doctors think is critical. So any time that there is something that is more powerful than my self-preservation, then I have to accept the fact that I'm a little over the deep end. And so what happened to me when I went through that process was I started to look back and I went through the fourth step and I started to recognize, and I'm talking about starting to. I did not get it all, thank God. But there was a lot of these things that started to surface and go, you know, you're right, you know, I am guilty, you know. I am guilty, you know. Toyota's not that bad of a car, and you know. Then I didn't like the Italians because I had a Renault, and I drank a bottle of vodka, and it just wouldn't jump a 2-foot, you know, curb. Took the bottom of the car out, and it really, you know, I was very grateful to be grow up in South America because you could get away with stuff like that. But when I look at the magnitude of the problem, you know, it's a power greater than myself. And I started to realize they would say, you know, if you debate the drink, you will always drink. You will always drink. You cannot debate the drink. And then if you're an alcoholic, what are you willing to do? What are you willing to do now, today, to stay clean and sober today? And, you know, the whole idea of a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. And the beauty of it is that's all I got to do is today. Today's the day. Just 24 hours. And I still use today. Today's a big deal for me. I don't, you know, there for me, and again, it kind of goes back to what I've seen and heard, was that I have to understand that this may be the only shot I get. And I am absolutely convinced in my heart that I will not get another shot. I went out at 16, came back in at 36, and it was by the grace of God. And I'm just convinced that if I go back out, I ain't coming back. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had doctors tell me if you drink, you're going to die. You know, and so, there's something wrong. The mental, most people walk out and go, oh, God, isn't that great? I've been very fortunate in terms of you know, my physical, you know, I did a lot of damage to my body, and but I get through it. But I do it a day at a time, you know, and it's really critical for me to stay focused on the program. I don't have any other programs. You know, when I enhance my spiritual condition, I may go to church or whatever. But this is what has got me sober and will keep me sober. But it's like, you know, rarely we've seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And, you know, those half measures availed me nothing. And I used to hate, Debbie says it all the time, 50% of AA won't get you 50% of sobriety. And I go, why not? You know? Who said? Well, I drink and you'll find out. I mean, I've been pretty obnoxious over the years. I mean, people would come in and say, I got a thinking problem. I go, really? Go have a drink and then come back and tell me what kind of problem you have. And because, again, I know everything. You know, it's really hard when you walk in and you just know. And so, you know, the rest of you people have to learn stuff. Not me. I just know. You know, I have these visions or something. And when I find out I'm wrong, it's okay. I just ignore it. I move a lot. That way you don't have to deal with it. Yeah. You know, you just change your story next place you go. You just. But I will say this, you know, I'm very grateful to be sober today. I mean, I say that sincerely, not because I'm a better person or I'm a better husband or I'm a better da, 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 because it's a benefit to me. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel better. Mm-hmm. I have never felt so good in all of my years of drinking and drugging. And I had great stuff. I mean, in South America, you walk into a pharmacy, you don't have to buy nothing off the street. There you just go in there and they give you whatever you need. And I have never experienced anything that made me feel better than sobriety. And it's free. And the beauty of it is it doesn't go away. You know, I don't wake up the next day and it's like, oh, here we go again. Let's try to get this thing fired up. I go to a lot of meetings, you know. I still go to a lot of meetings. Why? Because it's about giving back. But it's still all about me. I'm not here for you. I wish I were. You know, I'm here because this is a benefit to me. I got to do this in order to stay sober. My life is insurmountably better, and it will not be enough. Honest to God, it will not be enough to keep me sober today. What keeps me sober is doing the footwork, getting up, doing my prayers in the morning, bring God into my life, the God of my understanding. And I ask, the most important thing is I ask God, please keep me clean and sober today. And then I got to use some common sense. You know, I don't go to lunch with my drug dealer. That went out early. They told me that. So you can't go to lunch with your coke dealer. Why not? He's a great guy. What's his name? Oh, I don't know. Where does he live? I don't know. You know, I mean, that's the thinking. And I need to understand that after 20 years, that's how I think. Mm-hmm. You know, where do I go to work? I go to a work where I can drink. I mean, who would go to work in a place where you can't drink? I mean, good grief. And my life revolves around that, and it takes time. You know, and what keeps me coming back is that it's a much better quality of life, or I wouldn't be here. Honestly, you got to understand that. I mean, I do this for me, for Mike. If you benefit, that's grand. But the fact remains is it's still going to be all about me. Mm-hmm. So thanks very much. Appreciate it.